This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is your connection to local music and more. On the show today, we have a number of performers involved in Parkland College Theater and Bah Humbug Productions' production of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, adapted by Nick Schneider, with original music by Tim Schirmer, original song lyrics by Seamus Riley and Sherry Coons. And it opens this Friday at Parkland College in Champaign and runs through the 20th of December. And we have both of the creators with us and also, as I said, some of the cast members to do some numbers and a couple of scenes from the show. It's Live and Local today on FM 90.9. And that was the opening movement of a quintet for oboe, three horns, and bassoon by Ludwig van Beethoven, a performance here by members of the Classical Consortium, heard on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And I actually played that for a specific reason, and that is that Beethoven and Charles Dickens were contemporaries, although they didn't overlap by much. Beethoven was about 15 years from death by the time Dickens was born. And the reason I mentioned Charles Dickens is that the focus of today's Live and Local is, in fact, Dickens' A Christmas Carol, specifically in the Bah Humbug Productions production, along with Parkland College Theater in Champaign. This is their third annual production of this original work. The adaptation was made by Nick Schneider, who was with us on the show, and with original music by Tim Schirmer, who was also with us on the show, and a number of cast members as well. Nick doubles as adapter and Ebenezer Scrooge, so he is the main character here. It is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and thanks to all of you for coming in and joining us today.
Thank you, Kevin, for inviting us.
So I will ask Nick first, whose idea was this and why?
Well, it was my idea. And I've been in the Champaign, my wife and I have been in the Champaign area since about 1988. And theater is part of our background. We all both have degrees in the theater. I didn't come here as a theater person. I came here as a scientist, kind of second career. But at any rate, I began to get involved with local theater, Champaign-Urbana Theater Company. And I noticed that while we were developing an annual production of The Nutcracker, no one was doing an annual production of A Christmas Carol. Hundreds of theaters around the country do an annual production, some of them more famous than others, but the closest one to here, of course, is the Goodman Theater in Chicago's production of A Christmas Carol, which it does every year. So I thought, well, let's put something together. Originally, I looked at the scripts that were available. You can go out and purchase the royalties for a particular script, various versions. And the one I kind of liked was the one that was done originally by the London Royal Shakespeare Company. And it had a lot of music involved with it. And I thought, you know, we need to do that. But I don't want to get in. This is not a musical. So I thought I could do an adaptation if I could find someone to integrate some music for me. And of course, I had this dear friend of mine and musical colleague, Tim Schirmer, and somehow I conned him into this whole thing. I think I offered him an apple or a pear or an old banana, something along those lines.
He said we'd do it only once is what it was.
Yeah, but how can that be motivation for a composer who wants his music to be
exactly
heard again and again?
No.
Anyway, that's what started it. So what we did it in a collaboration. I put together a basic adaptation from my point of view, my interpretation of what Dickens meant within his story. And then Tim enhanced that with the musical accents that we needed. The idea is that the music contained within the adaptation is music not that furthers the plot of the story directly, but enhances the I guess, the ambiance of what the story is telling.
And I'm looking at your note to this year's production, referring to productions that you and your sister used to do.
Oh, well, yes, that's
when you
true.
Were a little younger,
yes,
I gather.
Right. Well, we used to, we had an old home in Detroit, Michigan, where we were raised, and the living room and the dining room were separated by a couple of French doors. Those are those things that kind of fold away when you shut off the living room and when you're eating or whatever. And we used to hang curtains there, and she and I would put together basically a Christmas pageant. You know, she would be Mary, I'd be Joseph, and we'd have little animals around. And that was our first production. I directed that and starred in it, and she was my co-star.
Was
and
she a younger sister?
Yes, she is.
So you bossed her around is the way the direction
probably,
went.
Probably, yeah, probably. As she recalls it, I did boss her around.
Yeah.
If you called Suzanne right now and said, hey, we're talking to your brother, he says that you contributed a lot to the show, and she says, well, I tried, but he never let me. She always remembers, too, later on when I would do these shows or magic shows back in the garage, and she would always say she just never forgets the invisible man that I used to collect a penny from the neighborhood kids. They'd come back and look at the invisible man, which, of course, was an empty chair. So I guess she probably figured I was going to be a circus con artist or something in the end. But
And now you're a scientist, but it isn't all that far off.
That's right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Depending on the science.
Right. Well, it's, you know, I kind of specialize in groundwater, but other than that, you know.
So, Tim, in adapting, well, actually, tell me, what did you do?
Well,
coming
one
up
thing
with
we
songs?
Decided jointly that we were, I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to do yet another musicalization of Christmas Carol, turning it into a musical. Sherry Coons and I had done an adaptation of Cricket on the Hearth about in 94 that actually from which one of the songs is lifted and placed in this show. That was our Christmas musical that we thought we were going to, you know, market and do well with. This show, when Nick approached me about it, it was really with the idea of it being a play with music, and that made a lot more sense. So what we've done is basically frame the story with an opening number and a closing number. All of the interior cues are either songs that take place in a situation live as a song would take place at a party, such as the Fezziwig party in Act One, or singing Christmas carols. We have a recurring theme, sort of we have a sextet who wanders about London streets singing Christmas carols, acting as transition music from scene to scene, and also sometimes within a scene, as you're going to hear. And other than that, the music really is just there to keep the story moving along.
The text, is it taken out of Dickens, or are these things that you imagined and put in between?
The external cues, the closing and opening number, or lyrics written by Seamus or Seamus Riley. We I almost called him O'Reilly. I didn't say that, Seamus. We tried to write a song in the style of the, you know, early to mid Victorian kind of period, that roughly speaking, to make it not anachronistic at least. So the opening number is a very basic primary, it's almost the 1-4-5 of a major scale that identifies that would be said you could hear very plainly in the opening number and closing number. So it's like a street caller, a street vendor kind of song, that kind of a feel.
We also had a challenge. Dickens, in his novella, A Christmas Carol, talks about Tiny Tim singing a song called Little Boy Lost in the Snow. Now, no lyrics are given, of course. It's a story. He just mentions that. If you read through that, you'll see that mentioned. But we wanted to create that song, and we did. Tim wrote a tune for that, and Seamus wrote the lyrics. We find it's difficult to utilize in the play for practical reasons because of the way it has to appear. But nonetheless, we have actually created the song Dickens talked about in his story.
We weren't the first folks to do that. Other composers have set something and called it a child lost in the snow or boy lost in the snow.
So Dickens didn't do you the favor like Tolkien did in Lord of the Rings, where he gave all of the songs in all of their verses in umpteen languages ad nauseum.
No.
So you could have, you know, choose what you want.
Not even one.
Let's introduce the other folks who are here in the studio with us. We're talking on Live and Local today about Parkland College and Bah Humbug Productions. I ought to be able to say that because my sister says I'm a real Scrooge a lot of the time. Speaking of sisters.
Now I know where to look for the next actor for Scrooge.
I haven't been on stage since sixth grade, so good luck.
Kevin and I did do a musical together some years ago.
Yeah, which one was that?
Was that Gypsy? Did we do Gypsy?
Could have been.
Yeah.
I did Gypsy. Did you do Gypsy?
Yeah, I was a producer.
Yeah, well, then there we go. Yeah. We probably came together. In any event, Bah Humbug Productions with Parkland College Theater, Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You've met Nick Schneider, who is the adapter of the show, and Tim Schirmer, the composer of the added music. Joe Porter is with us. Joe, get some semi-near a microphone and tell us, what are you doing here?
I am portraying the ghost of Jacob Marley, as well as a number of other Londoners and people who come and go.
Okay, Angela Arwine, why are you here?
I'm playing Elizabeth in the play, in the Christmas Carol, and today I am standing in for the actress who plays Nellie.
Who are Elizabeth and Nellie?
Nellie is Fred's wife. And
Fred, the nephew of Scrooge,
and Elizabeth is a Londoner. She has a couple of lines.
Just some person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cecily Ray.
Hello. I play Belle, and also Londoners, kind of sporadically throughout the play. But today I'm standing in for Charlotte, who is part of the sextet, and she flirts with Topper. I think that's him.
I think.
Also played by Joe Porter today.
Yes.
And Belle is?
Belle is Scrooge's lover whenever he is a teenager.
That's what I was thinking. Okay. And Rachel McGrath.
Hello. I am playing Beatrice, one of the sextet, and also same thing here.
Same thing here.
I will also be
playing. Is that a character?
Yes. Beatrice is also one of the sextet. Wife of Will, who is also in the sextet.
All right. Amy Randall.
Hello, I play Anne Fezziwig. She's the daughter of Fezziwig, Belle's sister.
Oh, there you go. Oh, I'd forgotten that little twist of the show. Brad Mertens.
Good afternoon. I play Fred, Scrooge's nephew, and one of the sextet members.
And you are a veteran of this show, at least of one previous season.
I have been lucky enough to be involved in it all 3 years now.
Okay. And Timothy O'Neill.
Hello. I actually play Bob Cratchit in this production of Christmas Carol.
A rather important character, but you have not done this role before.
No, I have not. I'm a very recent addition to the Champaign area.
Oh, well, okay. We might have some questions about that. Tim, we're going to do some numbers. What do you think is the sequence, or at least where do you want to start?
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll give you basically the end of the opening. The opening number has just finished. And Fred has some lines that lead us into the opening of the play.
Okay.
Although Marley had been dead for many years, my Uncle Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name on the sign outside his counting house, and there it stood years afterwards. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley. He answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Everything was all the same to him, and everything was as cold could be. And he didn't thaw it out 1 degree for Christmas.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day to save us all from Satan's power when we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, comfort and joy. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
Where you scallywags and beggars? Have you nothing better to do than interrupt my work and distract my clerk from his copying and counting? Off with you and your petty little lyrics. Ah, and you, Bob Cratchit, how is it you're not at your desk earning your pay? Or would you prefer to go home with what you have in that shovel instead of your 15 shillings? Back to your desk. You can't sit still till 7. Perhaps you should find another line of work.
Oh, no, sir. Sorry, sir. Just needed to warm the fingers a bit, sir. Didn't want to blur an important entry, you understand.
No, I don't understand, nor do I need to. Now back to your work.
Yes, sir.
Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Bah humbug on your Christmas.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas, you say? What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Well, come then. What right have you to be dismal? What reason have you to be morose? You're rich enough.
Bah humbug.
Oh, don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas? Out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer? I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Uncle!
Nephew! Keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep
it. Well, let me leave it alone, then. Much good it may do you, much good has ever done you.
There are many things from which I might have derived good but have not profited from, Christmas among them. But I've always thought of Christmas as a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year where men and women seem by one consent to open their shut-up hearts freely, and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave. And therefore, Uncle, although it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good, and will do me good, and I say God bless it.
Bob Cratchit, let me hear another sound from you, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation. Alfred, you're quite a powerful speaker. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come dine with us tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll see you in Parliament first.
But why? Why?
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love. Good afternoon.
But, Uncle, you never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. We have never had any quarrel to which I've been a party, but I have made my visit in homage to Christmas, and I shall keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And Happy New Year.
Good afternoon. Well, Mr. Cratchit, you'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient, sir.
But it's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I were to hold back half a crown for it, you think it unfair, and yet you don't think it unfair when I pay a day's wage for no work.
But Christmas is but once a year, sir.
Humbug, a poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. Nonetheless, I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the morning after.
Oh, yes, sir. Of course, sir. I'll make it up, sir. And Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Humbug to you.
Does anybody else in the world ever say humbug?
No,
besides
I don't think
Ebenezer
so.
Scrooge?
One of the things you heard there, Kevin, too, was in one of the other parts of the musicality of this show is that Tim has created all sorts of mood and background music. My professional background in the theater was more with television and film. So I'm used to having mood music or what you might call emotional stimulus underneath whatever's happening. And I wanted that to occur in this. And Tim has created a number of these a cappella choral pieces that just fit in under, provide transition from one scene to the other, and provide kind of the general mood. That music, that sound, along with the effects that John Shainoff has created and the lighting effects that Sean Murphy has created, it's a wonderful picture. It's like sitting in the middle of a theater and having, we have surround sound and having all this light and magic and fog and stuff going on around you. So that's kind of what you get out of this show.
That's Nick Schneider, who plays the role of Ebenezer Scrooge and adapted Dickens' A Christmas Carol for the stage the production by Parkland College Theater, or I should say at Parkland College Theater and with their support. But it's Bah Humbug Productions, which exists basically to produce this show. And Tim Shermer of the Fine Arts and Music faculty at Parkland wrote the music. Seamus Riley, also of Parkland, and Sherry Coons wrote the text. And we have a number of the cast members in with us in the studio here on Live and Local. The show opens this Friday, doesn't it?
No, a week from this Friday.
I'm ahead by a week.
You are, okay, but we wish it was this Friday. No, it opens December 5th. 4th, I'm sorry. December 4th is the first public performance. We do a performance on the 3rd, which is invited for those members of the community who are otherwise disadvantaged, like the Cunningham Children's Home and so forth. We invite some of those folks in to see a performance that they might not otherwise be able to attend. But it does open up to the public on December 4th, 5th, and 6th. There are matinees every Saturday and Sunday. We run until Sunday, December 20th. Generally Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but the last weekend we also do a Thursday evening performance. Yeah.
And Parkland College Theater, you can just go there if you want tickets, or the web address is
www.parkland.edu/theater. Or you can conveniently call 351-2528.
In the 217 area.
That's right.
Of course. I have to tell you, I saw this production last year, and I was just delighted with it. I thought it was marvelously effective. It was a lot of fun. And the Christmas, for me, I would rather go see A Christmas Carol every year than watch The Nutcracker, but that's just me.
I think both are important. I would certainly not. I brought that up initially because it is a wonderful production. It's moved, of course, from where it originally started and is now over at Krannert. But I think that the other venue, I think A Christmas Carol does provide a different experience. It's live theater, and we've really worked to make it family-friendly, both in terms of what occurs on stage, how we envelop you in the telling of the story, and also in what it costs you to come and see that story. It's a very inexpensive, a family-friendly sort of thing to come and see. And every year we change it a little bit. It evolves. It's meant to evolve. Even if you had the same actors every year playing the same roles, we adapt the script a little bit. We've created characters, of course, none Dickens characters. We've created characters to help tell the story. And, you know, I zapped a couple characters from the first couple years and created a new couple characters. So we have this ongoing kind of evolution that we believe is proper in an artistic sort of sense.
This is actually, he's being a little modest too, believe it or not. Nick is being modest about this. He is very modest about it because it's quite a significant rewrite in many ways. The show is, from my perspective, is much improved over last year's production. So if you liked last year's production, or if you didn't see it, you have now two reasons, because you can talk to the folks who don't come this year and tell them what they missed. In many ways, it's a brand new production. The effects are different. Some of them are the same, but there are many that have been changed, and there has been a significant, I think, improvement from, as I say, my perspective, in the script itself. It's much tighter. It's the same story always. Everybody tells the same story, but we're telling it in many ways, a much more entertaining way even than previous years.
Well, it's the same story with all the same wonderful lines, and you, that last scene had one of my favorites, which is for have somebody be boiled in his own pudding, which, you know, could be a really gruesome image if you think about it too hard.
That's right. Well, you know, in making an adaptation of a story that's been told many times and adapted many, many ways, you have to approach it as though you just read it for the first time. And we tried to keep in the story. We try to keep those items of Dickens that are really important, those lines. I mean, there are lines in here, you're not going to change, and God bless us, everyone. I'm not going to turn that into something else. It's what it is. So you keep those kinds of lines to keep the storyline that everybody understands, and then you enhance it with different characters. Maybe you switch around how people appear or show up. So the way the story is told is kind of fun. You know?
And, of course, you're not going to suddenly have Scrooge say, nonsense or fiddlesticks instead of
for goodness
bah humbug.
No.
You'd have to change the name of the production company, too.
That's right.
This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Support for our show comes in part from Lincoln Square Village, who, along with the Urbana Business Association, present the Lincoln Square Village Holiday Market Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., now through December 19th, with homegrown produce, baked goods, holiday plants. Is today after the 19th? Yeah, it is. So that's an old announcement. I'm going to throw that away. We'll do another one later on. And I believe some of you have to leave before too long. Is that still true?
Within the next 10 minutes.
Within the next 10 minutes. Well, why don't we do the next vocal number anyway? It's time
good.
For a little more music.
Sure.
We're talking about Parkland College Theater's production of A Christmas Carol, Dickens, and a number of the cast members here. Tim Schirmer did the music and is conducting, directing the thing. There's an orchestra.
Actually, this is the first year. Nick Hedrick, one of his other requests of our first year was that we use no instrumentalists except those instruments that could be done live by actor singers on stage.
Uh-huh.
We did that for 2 years. As we both discovered, it grew more and more difficult to find people who could do all of those things. So I finally convinced him that we should record the instrumental accompaniment when possible for the external cues, especially not the onstage stuff. Will still be live or a mix, but
you didn't bring any of the recorded music today.
No, we did not.
That would have been an interesting coordination.
It would have been
thing to do on stage. But what's our next scene or
we're gonna do
number?
A scene, the next scene is the scene in our Act Two of Fred's party, following close on the heels the Cratchits' rather meager Christmas fare. We see Fred and his friends and young family celebrating something of a Christmas Eve dinner together, and they, in the course of this dinner, following it probably, they sing a song. And Scrooge and Christmas
present right.
oversee this.
Yeah, in the story, Dickens just talks about a game that they play, and I think that we've turned it into a song to have a way of, again, presenting a musical interlude here that, in this case, actually fits into the story pretty straightforward.
It's been a song in other productions. It's been a rhyme. The Minister's Cat, I think, was one of the versions of somebody used. It's a Victorian Seamus Riley is the person who was responsible for the lyrics in this case. And he did his research and based this on the premise of people, Victorians especially, entertaining themselves by creating sort of interesting challenges for themselves in the context of a game, like coming up with the minister's cat is a virtuous cat, the minister's cat is a volatile cat. So you have, you know, something like that would be one wordplay game. They were fascinated with wordplay. And so this song sort of reflects that. Fred has to come up with clues for a guessing game in the context of a song. And the idea is that he's doing this in the moment. It's not prepared. He's quite a brilliant little fellow.
The Minister's Cat, that was from the movie called Scrooge.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is, if you've never seen it, it's wonderful.
Yeah,
I love it. Albert Finney as Scrooge is just fantastic. Yeah.
Is that in that one too? Because that was my first encounter
I'm
with a presentation
sure.
of it was Scrooge when I was in high school. The movie.
That's Finney's.
Yeah.
That is.
That's a great music in that too by Brickus.
Last time I saw that, I realized this is an aside, but it's such a wonderful movie. Last time I saw that, I was surprised at how young Finney was when he did it. I didn't remember that he looked so young. Anyway, let's hear your version of this game.
Who's that? I know that voice, that laugh.
Well, children, Fred. I think you've had quite a day, so off to bed with you.
So tell us, dear friend, how's that cranky old uncle of
cranky?
Yours?
Cranky? That's not the half of it. Oh, my uncle believes that Christmas is a humbug, and as I live, he said so straight out.
For shame, and such a righteous man at that.
Well, he's a comical old fellow, and not so pleasant as he might be. However, his offenses carry their own punishment, and I have nothing to say against him.
Nothing to say except that he's very rich, Fred.
Well, what of that, my dear? His wealth is of no use to him.
And I have no patience with him.
Oh, I have. I'm sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. Who suffers by his ill whims? Well, himself, always. Here, he takes it into his head to dislike us, and he won't come and dine with us. Well, what's the consequence?
Well, I think he loses a very good dinner.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very glad to hear it, because I haven't great faith in these young housekeepers. What do you say, Topper?
Well, my dear Fred, it's hardly for me to say. As a bachelor and wretched outcast among you marrieds, I don't think I should express an opinion on the subject, especially with such as Charlotte nearby.
Do go on, Fred. He never finishes what he begins to say. He is such a ridiculous fellow.
Oh, now, I was only going to say that the consequence of his taking a dislike to us and not making merry with us is, as I think, that he loses some pleasant moments, which could do him no harm. He may rail at Christmas till he dies, but he can't help thinking better of it. I defy him if he finds me going there in good temper, year after year, saying, Uncle Scrooge, how are you? You know, I think I shook him yesterday.
Well, Fred, I think it's time for some entertainment.
Maybe Charlotte would be so kind as to play a song or two.
Oh, I'd rather play a game.
Oh, wonderful idea, yes.
How about the song that is a game? The yes and no game.
Oh,
yes,
much better.
Great idea.
Lead off, Fred. Whose shoe shall we pass?
Fred leads, so it's Fred's shoe we should be using.
Okay. Okay, everyone. Charlotte, start us off.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
There is a little something, and it lives in London town. It snarls and it growls as it strolls up and down.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
A savage dog?
No. Good guess. It is not led by anyone or tethered to a yoke. It's sometimes very funny, but it's not a joke.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
The bishop?
Oh, God. Will I know?
It always goes to market, and it fetches quite a price. But no one really wants it, for it's not very nice.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
A bull?
A bear?
No, and no! Okay, one more. It never goes to parties, and each ball it always misses. It is so very mean that it would not spend Christmas.
Oh, all right.
Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, oh please, oh do. Oh, tell me what I'm thinking, can you, or you, or you?
Oh, I have the answer. I found it.
You
I know it
were
is.
To be in bed. Now back to bed with you right this minute.
Oh, but not before we hear the answer.
All right, then. What is it?
It's Uncle Scrooge.
Yes, yes, that's right. It's true, it's true. And since my uncle has given us plenty of merriment, it would be ungrateful not to drink his health. So let's, with this glass of mulled wine ready to our hand, raise to him a toast. So I say, here's to Uncle Scrooge.
Uncle Scrooge!
A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to the old man, whatever and wherever he may be. He wouldn't take it from me, but may he have it nevertheless. Uncle Scrooge.
Nicely done, and I think listeners have even in that little snippet, a wonderful idea of just how delightful this version of the show is, because the dialogue zips along nicely, and the music just, you know, it's there's a certain simplicity to it, there's a certain tunefulness to it. You have a sense that it could be a kind of tune that might have been sung in Dickens' time, which I believe was your point.
Absolutely. Tim. Hope that's true.
The music is by Tim Shermer, who's director of music for Parkland College, also teaches music at director of music for Parkland College Theater, and teaches.
I'm the program director for music, along with Dr. Peter Rubel.
Thank you very much for clarifying official titles and so on.
And all that stuff.
And Nick Schneider made the adaptation and plays the role of Ebenezer Scrooge. And some, you can't see this, but all of our ladies are leaving. I'm afraid to ask why that is. But
we're going to do a version of The Odd Couple for you now.
There we go. So you may see hear a door or two opening, which is perfectly fine. So thank you all very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And I'm going to read this thing that I started to read before and then stopped because I got my dates mixed up. And that is to say that Live and Local today is supported in part by Lincoln Square Village, who, along with the Urbana Business Association, present the Lincoln Square Village Holiday Market, Saturdays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., now through December 19th, with homegrown produce, baked goods, holiday plants, crafts, and more. Located inside Lincoln Square Village in downtown Urbana, information is at 344-3872 or at urbanabusiness.com. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Coming up a little before 1 o'clock, I'll have a calendar of events for you. I don't have a lot to give you during this Thanksgiving week. And we'll also have a weather forecast. News headlines coming up in a minute past 1, and then classical music for you starting at 1:06. I'm getting hand signals here. We've got.
Oh, we're going to do another scene. We could do another scene for you, Kevin.
Oh, sure. No, we've got loads of time here. We've got lots of time. Okay.
One of the challenges I think we faced. You've alluded to it in the comments you've made and some of the ways we've answered it, is that in doing an adaptation, much of the novella, of course, is narrative, and many times when you even see the story, there's a lot of narration going on. When you do it live, of course, the narration is reduced to a minimum. At best, the exposition has to be done in terms of dialogue, in the terms of what one character says to the other. We've used at least one device here, and that's we built this show on the idea that Fred, the nephew, or the actor that's playing the nephew, is telling the story to us. He says at the beginning, when after the opening number, or part of the opening number, he says, "Good evening. Tonight, my friends and I are going to tell you the story of." And so we use that device. It's actually not been used before. Thornton Wilder uses it as a stage manager in one of his plays, and a number of other plays he has the same type of character. And so Fred provides this kind of link, narrates. For example, before each ghost appears, Fred makes a comment about where his uncle has been to and where he's going, so that the audience not only sees that, but gets a sense that the story is being told in this way. One of the key ghosts that Ebenezer encounters, of course, is that of his old partner, Jacob Marley. Now, here in the studio, we can't, of course, they can't see the fact that Joe Porter, who portrays a wonderful ghost of Marley, is going to fly up into the air. We'll just tell you that he's going to fly up in the air, but and we don't have some of the wonderful sound effects and things that go along with this, but I think for the language, to get a hint of where Scrooge gets the impetus to even listen to these other ghosts, I thought maybe we could play just this scene for you.
No.
Well, in that case, we'll do something else. But
no.
What
you were talking about was exactly going to be my next question anyway, is how much of Dickens. And so before you do that, I am curious about the narration. So does that give you an opportunity to use some of Dickens' own narration and put it in the mouth of Fred, or you didn't do that so much?
Actually, all of the narration done by Fred is, we'll call it Schneider narration. It's not Dickens. As I approached the novella and the words, I may have indicated, I lifted those things of Dickens that were necessary. And basically, you know, it's not plagiarism because it's actually public domain, or it's not copyrighted anymore. But the point is that the next challenge was, when I wrote new scenes, I had to write it in a Dickensian style. And I missed up a couple of things. For example, I misused the word great. Not the fact that Dickens doesn't have the word great in the language of the times, in the Victorian times, but it's how it's used. Another little mistake I made, I would say wages, when in Victorian times you would just say wage. So you couldn't say, I've earned my wages for the week. You would say, I've earned my wage for the week. So little things like that, we tried to, you know, I missed up a couple of those. I fixed those by now. But when I wrote a scene between Belle and Scrooge, which doesn't really occur, you know, I had to have a dialogue between these two, young Scrooge, what we call young Scrooge and Belle, we had to create the right kind of sense about that. And so we've done that with each. Just an example, Brad is here. Brad, give us an idea of when you come in, a little parody we do just before he sees the ghost of Marley.
And this is Brad Mertens in the role of Scrooge's nephew, Fred.
Fred, yes.
'Twas indeed the night before Christmas, and all through my uncle's house, the spirits were whirring and scurrying, not unlike a mouse. And Scrooge, in his night robe and warm sleeping cap, sat with his gruel near the fire before taking his nap.
And then we have a lot of, he falls asleep, we hear a lot of bells and sounding, just like in the story, and then appearing in a cloud of fog and smoke is this apparition, and Scrooge notices it. And he says, what's this? 'Tis a relic, is it? Must be this gruel. Ah, humbug! Upon which the ghost comes even closer to him, and Scrooge says, how now, and what may I ask do you want?
Much.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Well, who were you then? You're particular for a shadow.
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Marley, you say? Oh, as in Jacob Marley. Well, Jacob, can you sit down?
I can.
If you don't mind.
You don't believe in me, do you?
I don't. At this point, a chair flies in from who knows where, all decorated in chains and all kinds of wondrous thing, and then Marley says,
why do you doubt your senses?
Well, because little things affect them. Slight disorder of the stomach fools them. You may be an undigested bit of beef, crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. There's more of gravy than grave about you. Humbug, I say! At which point, Marley flies into the air in kind of a mini rage. Oh, and, you know, Scrooge just says, dreadful apparition! Why do you trouble me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk among his fellow men. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death.
You are fettered, chained. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard of my own free will. And of my own free will, I wore it. Do you not know the weight and length of the chain you bear yourself? It is as full, heavy, and as long as it was 7 Christmas Eves ago, and you have built it even stronger since. It is a ponderous weight to drag behind you.
Yeah, so there's the sense of this confrontation between Jacob and Scrooge, and he shatters Scrooge and finally tells him, you know, there's a chance and hope that you can be, you don't have to be like me. And what's that chance and hope? And, well, he's going to be visited by 3 ghosts. And, you know, Scrooge isn't too happy about this, but whatever's ever, because Marley disappears, as in the story. And then Scrooge is visited by the ghosts of past, present, and future. And all that comes with a lot of fun, a lot of special effects, and a lot of good old-fashioned storytelling.
What do you think is, this is your chance to expound on this, if you have something to expound on, what do you think is the appeal of this story? I mean, there are tons of stories that have been told over the centuries, and most of them disappear. And this one...
This is one of the first Christmas stories in terms of, you know, the Christmas in at least the English-speaking countries, principally Britain, was not celebrated for throughout the entire sort of the Cromwell and the Protectorate and all of that stuff. All religious connections were severed to the old Roman tradition through the Anglican tradition. So this was one of the first times that in Victorian, in fact, Victoria's husband, whose name was Edward, right? Isn't that Edward?
Oh, don't ask me.
I can't remember.
Wrong guy.
No, I think it's Edward, was German. And introduced the Christmas tree into English tradition, and via that through into American tradition, as being a standard symbol in during this holiday season. And so all of the stuff that we connect as Americans, especially connect to Christmas traditions, really ultimately stem back to this period, and probably a great number of them to this novella.
Yeah, and another thing from my perspective, and I included in the words of one of the what we call Fred's Fabulous Six, this touring group that basically supposedly the heart of the tellers of the story, and it's Beatrice, and she says to the audience, it's really a story about life. History, as you know, may very well know, has a way of repeating itself regardless of our best efforts to change it. And those repetitions, those ghosts of history, are what haunt us. And I think that when you tell this story, whatever position in life you are, whatever age in life you are, you take away something different from it. But in fact, we still have the same sort of problems and issues that confronted Dickens and the Victorian age at that time, the thing he was trying to talk about, inequality in class and so forth and so on. Those still exist within us, much to our chagrin, actually. And I think that story keeps coming back and it picks on us, and we want to listen to it thinking, it's just an old story. But in fact, it's very real. It is to me. I mean, that's my perspective of it.
Well, there's probably a remarkable number of us who really could use our own personal ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future, or yet to come, I guess he says.
Well, that's another line Charlotte says. Let me just interesting you say that. And while this is a story for the time of Christmastide, it's surely a ghost story about ghosts we all know, or more likely, fear to know, the ghosts of past, present, and future.
It's looking to me like we're gearing up for another scene, because I have all these we have all these guys standing up at their stands.
The answer, as you so succinctly put it, was no.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, we don't really have another scene.
Another song?
I don't know. We have anything that we can sing.
We don't have anything that just the guys sing.
Which just the guys don't really just sing. And Scrooge, of course, does not sing. Tim won't let me sing. Originally, in the first 2 years, I sang the last two last line of the closing song. I said, and God bless us, everyone. But, you know, he said, Nick, you're always out of tune.
That was in tune. That was in tune. I'm utterly convinced everybody who says they can't sing can. They may just need a little more work.
There's actually only one person in my 35 years of doing this in various venues, and professionally and academic situations, that couldn't carry a tune. and she won a Pulitzer Prize. Beth Hanley could not carry a tune for the, and it's the only person still to this day that I agree
that
with you.
That didn't stop
that
her.
Didn't stop her, though, did it?
I think I've had one person.
Have you?
Yeah, he came into my choir, and I was very concerned about what was going to happen, and he weeded himself out within 2 weeks. And I was very glad about that.
Well, actually, there is a song we could kind of sing together because Scrooge sings it at the end as he comes in. He reprises actually a song from his past, from a song that was sang at a party at Fezziwig's. And so we could probably do that and get along with it because I sing that a verse of that as part of the. Finding out that I'm back, I'm alive, and Christmas is here, I'm going to celebrate.
Nick's falling back on his old live TV days here, you can see. And here we're scrambling with the script.
It's called Live and Local. That's
right. It doesn't get liver than this. Okay?
Everybody has run for the scripts. And
so let's do
found
that.
The page.
Right.
So just from the top, tomorrow's
sure.
Christmas?
Yeah.
So let me turn this up a little bit here, I guess.
The sleigh bells all jingling, can you hear the piper play? The world's alive with music, tomorrow's Christmas Day. Look out for Father Christmas, he might be on his way. Sitting by the fireside all tingling, can you hear the children say? You better hang the stockings, tomorrow's Christmas Day. Look out for Father Christmas, he must be on his way.
Beautiful. That's a great way to actually end this segment. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we've had with us members of the cast of Dickens' A Christmas Carol, as adapted by Nick Schneider, with us here in the role of Ebenezer Scrooge, with original music by Tim Shermer, also with us and was playing the piano, and song lyrics by Seamus Riley and Sherry Coons. The director this year, Michelle Mills.
Yes, that's correct. Doing a wonderful job.
J.W. Morissette did it the first couple
right.
of years. Musical director Tim Shermer as well. Parkland College Theater and Bah Humbug Productions are responsible for this third annual rendition of the Christmas Carol. It opens Friday, December the 4th, runs through Sunday, December the 20th. Information at parkland.edu/theater. And I am quite comfortable in strongly endorsing this production based on last year's rendition.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin. They can also call Area 217-351-2528 for tickets. And we also have a website which you can get. There are some pictures and things on www.bahumbug.biz. There's a bunch of little doors you can enter, and some of them will give some pictures from the show. And
I was
so
on
forth.
There. That's really fun. And the first ever explanation of what a green room that I have seen. So that was delightful. Thank you all very much for coming on the show, and have a successful production.
Thank you for having us, Kevin.
Thank you very much.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. And here's a look at a few events that you can go see and hear in our area. The Piano Man is in his weekly location on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock at the Canopy Club in downtown Urbana. Opus 24 is giving its fall concert in Decatur at St. Patrick Catholic Church tomorrow night at 7:30. And nothing at all on my calendar through Friday. On Saturday, Donald McGuire, traditional Irish singer, mandolin player, and guitarist, is going to be at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana. And next Sunday, the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana present their annual Messiah Sing-Along with orchestra this year at McKinley Presbyterian Church. That is next Sunday at 4 o'clock. This is a test of the emergency alert system. And our broadcast today is made possible with support from these business partners: EAG Company Incorporated of Fairmount, Family Video Movie Club of Springfield, First National Bank and Trust Company of Clinton, and Jarman Center of Tuscola. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you. It's going to be a partly sunny afternoon, a high temperature about 56. Tonight, mostly cloudy with areas of patchy fog, the low 44. Tomorrow, cloudy with occasional showers, primarily in the afternoon, the high 54. And Wednesday, expected to be cloudy with occasional showers and a high of 45. We're at 53, a little before 12 noon. News headlines are next at 101. Julie Amacher hosts classical music for you at 106. This is WYLL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators, W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. We are the listener-supported broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Send us your events. Let us know about your performing arts organization wherever you are in our listening area. The address is willcalendar@illinois.edu. That is WYLL calendar at illinois.edu. And thanks for joining us on Live and Local.
From NPR.